Hey everyone, this is Paul Siegel, and you're listening to Wandering DMs. Wandering DMs comes to you live every Sunday at 1 p.m. Eastern, and you can catch us on twitch.tv/wanderingdms or youtube.com/wanderingdms/live. And now, on with the show.
Hi everyone, welcome to Wandering DMs. I'm Paul.
And I'm Dan, and in this episode of Wandering DMs, we're going to be talking about travel encounters in Dungeons & Dragons, old and new, and other games. Should they be randomized or should they be preset? All that and more today in Wandering DMs.
Dan, before we travel on into the discussion, I will remind everyone, as always, at the end of the show, we will be hosting our after-party chat. That is a live video chat that Dan and I host with all of our patrons. And you can join in that chat by becoming a patron yourself at patreon.com/wanderingdms. Join at any tier. You'll get an invite to our Discord server. Make sure you hop on over there and around the end of the show, maybe a little after, around 2:10, 2:15 Eastern time, we will start up the after-party chat and hopefully see you there.
Yeah, we like that every week. And just looking at the live chat right this second, big thanks to our helper, Evacuous, for checking in that all of our channels are live at the moment. So whether you're watching us on YouTube or Twitch or one of those later on, glad to have you here on the Sunday. So yeah, travel encounters in D&D seemed relevant. It's actually something that, Paul, you and I were grappling with communally when we ran a joint game over the summer, actually, about exactly how to assess that. And it's a question that comes up from D&D players a lot. So, of course, we like to play classic-type D&D, like from the inception, rules that kind of are similar to what when they were first laid down 50 years ago. There's a lot of theories to wandering encounters. We feel that they're important enough that we kind of took the name of the channel from that concept, as a matter of fact. And Paul, maybe we, so it's come up from Kilroy in the chat. So about 10 minutes ago, when we were prepping for the episode here, we realized that Paul and myself had separately both picked out that same comment as an image to look at.
Yeah. Let's talk about Order of the Stick. Sure.
Let's talk about that. Apparently, we're all going to do that.
Yeah. So this has got to be at least a decade old at this point. But there's an Order of the Stick issue here where you have two characters talking about the frequency, the probability of encounters while traveling across two different points. And you know, I'll just jump to the punchline here, which is, of course, that you always have exactly one encounter, no matter how far you travel from point A to point B. If assuming that there's no specific plot points along the way, there are major NPCs or anything like that, there'll always be exactly one random encounter, no matter how far you travel. Do you find that to
be
true?
And the rationale for it, let me just say, the rationale in the comic, right, is your character Varsuvius here says, random encounters are tedious and a waste of everyone's valuable time. So no matter how long the journey, you only have one random encounter before everyone gets bored and moves on to the main plot. And I remember, Paul, the first time I saw that comic, and I liked the Order of the Stick, and I enjoyed it quite a bit. I was very angry. I was very testy. It seemed like a violation of a simulated fantasy world. Did you recognize what was happening there? I was surprised.
I thought it was an accurate jibe, right? So I mean, what you're getting at here is how frequently to pepper your, because you could have this conversation in the dungeon as well, right? You could just talk about like how much in the dungeon to use wandering monster tables versus set encounters. And it's really just talking about pacing, right? It's talking about pacing of the simulated world versus the real world, right? If you're rooted in the real world of a bunch of people sitting around a table and you have 3 hours, 4 hours, whatever it is, you set amount of time you set down to play, you know, how much of this simulated random encounters do you want when you're really just in a transitory period of the story, right? We're going from, we're in this area on the map, we need to go to that area on the map. It should take some simulated amount of time. There should be some simulated danger in between. I don't know. I thought it was very apt, very clever point that most, I feel like very, very frequently in games, yeah, the DM will be like, oh, I guess I should roll some wandering monsters. And then they roll one and then they're like, ah, geez, I just ate half an hour of our gameplay or an hour of our gameplay. There's only 2 hours left in the night. Screw it. You get to the end point. Let's go.
Somehow that's actually funnier than the Order of the Stick. Well, how you just delivered that is actually funnier than the original script for some reason. I don't know. There are interesting critiques around wandering monsters, around randomized travel encounters, of course. And I try to not do that. I try to commit. If there's a mechanic like that, I try to commit. And I feel like that's evidence that maybe if that happens, maybe the mechanic wasn't thought out in advance properly is the kind of thing that comes to me when mechanics start to get thrown out in game. I want to pay attention to that. I want to make a note. I want to think about it afterwards about whether the mechanic was really designed right in the first place. I tend not to want to let one of those moments go to improve what the rule was supposed to be. And of course I don't know if you want to bring up the original D&D outdoor table, so the basis for encounters in Dungeons and Dragons, lo these 50 years ago, was here's the page of Wilderness Wandering Monsters, and you have the chances at the top, and then that feed the different terrain feeds you into different types of encounters, and you've got your subtype table there. So a pretty rich series of possibilities for encounters in the world in the standard D&D world as you're wandering around. And you know, the interesting thing to me is that if you look at the wilderness adventuring guidelines in D&D, somewhat surprisingly, this is the entire thing. This is the entirety of what it means to adventure in the wilderness. The expectation there, somewhat surprisingly, is that there isn't any preset encounters. There aren't any point A or point B. At some point, you just wander in the wilderness, and maybe if you look at a little bit of extra text that you get from Dave Arneson and his outside books, like these are all positives. Like he actually, Arneson to begin with didn't reuse the term encounter. He actually used the term adventure. And an adventure only happens if something positively results from these tables. This is actually what you're looking for. This is the only way you're going to get treasure is if one of these things happens in the wilderness. So it's an interesting transition, I think, that you could say that was not a great design, perhaps, but it at least got them started, right? The tables were the entire campaign world, and that was actually a fairly efficient way to get started fleshing out the world and what was in it, is that there aren't any points. It's only randomized stuff. And then we've obviously transitioned away from that. So I think it's an interesting starting point that the initial mechanics of D&D didn't actually expect that the DM had any time to pre-place anything.
It's interesting, Dan. I mean, I think this topic, what's amusing me is that as we were sitting down, but just before flipping on the cameras for this show, you were saying, oh, I expect we'll probably agree on this. But I actually think that this topic kind of pokes at a core difference between our styles when running games. I know that you do like to be more simulationist, and personally, I shy away from that. I generally tend to think of random content as filler. It's not, you know, I like Jeff Rian's statement of keep the main thing, and I always want to be pushing the envelope. Like I kind of feel like that's why, say, the game is not fun when you completely remove the DM and you replace it entirely with just random generation and computer-driven models. I think that if you tried to play with like an AI DM or a, you know, I'm just gonna, I'm sure that even without computers, right? I feel like there was stuff for this maybe in the back of the first edition DMG, right? Of like, you could just randomly generate dungeons ad infinitum, right? You can use geomorphs and you can roll on tables and you could have a great adventure. And I'd say you could have an adventure. Will it be great? Maybe. Maybe not. And so I've always been very interested in randomization, and I like how randomization adds chaos, I guess, to my campaign. Like, I like to toss it in there to add a little spice, but I have no problem rolling on a table and going, yeah, I don't like that. I'm gonna ignore the result or reroll or do something different because I am looking for ultimately a human crafted experience.
Well, I think that part of my point here today is, okay, great. Now this is contentious. Okay, we're now we've got a Dan Paul fight episode. Great. I didn't expect that going in. Surprise. That's fine. I can adjust. It's okay. And part of my thesis, I think, was as opposed to, and we can look at some examples through the years, and this, I feel it, the designers still kind of vary between should the travel encounters be pre-selected and predetermined before you start play. And part of my thesis is that, yeah, of course I want the human DM to be involved, and I want the human DM to be a little bit surprised. I think there's a big advantage to having randomized encounters when you're traveling, in that the DM themselves have to adjust and have to be part of the play and have to flex their improvisational muscles as they themselves are surprised by what's happening because they don't have it pre-planned. And so I feel there's a lot of creative input you get from the DM as they knit this in to make sense in some way that you wouldn't get if things were entirely predetermined.
I think I agree with that. In general, like, that is why I do like random content and randomization. I mean, even just look at another example of this, which is going to feel wildly different, is look at the very design of Fearful Ends, right? The whole point of Fearful Ends is putting into player control a little bit, and with some randomization due to a deck of cards, the descent of their characters, which definitely brings chaotic elements to the game. It encourages the players to behave erratically, right, and to veer off from whatever the theoretical plot is and do unusual, unexpected actions, which I enjoy. And I enjoy that as DM to then, yes, react to that and incorporate that into the story and go forward, right? This is we're sort of getting into my quilt maker metaphor for DMing that I quite like. Yeah, I do like that randomization. But if we get to, like, you're talking about, like, you know, you have a, you, and I guess maybe we should talk about the context here. Are we talking about, like, a long-running campaign? Is that what we're talking about? Are we talking about, one-off adventures or whatnot? I guess we could root ourselves maybe in the adventure we just ran together, right? Where we had an outdoor wilderness map with some set locations with specific set encounters in them, and then knowledge that the players are going to be traveling along the roadways between them. And the question was, should there be random encounters along those roadways or not? And if so, how often should we check?
Now, so I have that. Maybe we want to take a look at what we came up with for the table, at least. Sure. I have that as an image with a blue dot on it there. And so this is one of our Wandering DM's Dungeon Design Dash products. It's number 4. And this is our habit for those, frankly. It's the same, like, at least the table's the same habit as we present, whether it's a dungeon level or this wilderness, a table with 6 things. And I would recommend that, again, psychologically, magic number 7, plus or minus a couple, it's convenient for a human running it, as you can kind of parse what's available easily. It gives you some texture to the environment. D6 is kind of a nice die to roll, obviously. So we had this, but we got into the game that we were going to run, and we realized that at least at the moment that we were playtesting this, we had never come up with a rule of how frequent to roll on this table. And yeah. Paul and I were traveling to the game, we had to have that discussion on the fly.
Yeah. Now, I want to point out, right, that one of the things that I do like here, and I think that you and I do agree on, and I can roll this back to my original long-running BX campaign I ran, is I like wandering monster tables that are crafted to an area. So, for example, when I was running basic D&D, I had many wandering monster tables that were all separated geographically. You're in the Deadwoods, we roll this on this table. If you're in the Giant Plains, we roll this table, right? So there's different tables that helped thematically, right? So when you look at this, and viewers, if you haven't seen it, go back and grab the WDM 04. Is that the one this is from? I think.
Yes, exactly. Right, yep.
Great. Grab this from WDM 04. Look at the context, right? All of the entries in this Wandering Monster table are evocative of the stuff that's in the adventure, right? These are, you know, all, I don't know, knock-ons or related to the set pieces, which I like a lot.
Now, okay, so I'll share my opinion on this point about should the tables be related to the environment. Absolutely mandatory. Absolutely mandatory. And it's, you know, it might be an oversight on my part that when I talk about random wandering monsters, that I overlook that some people might not know that, frankly. And of course, my take is the whole point to a random monster table is it absolutely should be communicating what's in the environment. That's the whole point of the random encounter table, is to tell you quickly and briefly and concisely what's in this environment, what is this place like. To me, that's the whole point. And now,
in the original books, of course, you get this, but only in the most generic way, right? Of just like, well, what's the terrain like? Okay, so you get a table for mountains and a table for desert, right? And I feel like I want more specific, right? That's why I like this one. I mean, there's custom monsters in here that only appear in this adventure, right? In our wandering monster table, right? These are all very localized to that adventure. And I like that. I want to go from the more generic to more specific.
Sure. And I think a great example of that is if you look at original D&D in the dungeon encounter tables, and it's something that was never explicated in the early rule books. I think that might have been an oversight. But if you look at the original, like the dungeon encounters first level in original D&D, there's like 8. And there's orcs, goblins, spiders, something else, skeletons, something else. And if you compare to Gary Gygax's first level of Castle Greyhawk, that's exactly the monsters that have lairs. Is a one-to-one perfect bijection between what has lairs and is located somewhere with a treasure is exactly what shows up on the wandering monster level for first level in core D&D. So the dungeon encounter tables, at least in the core book, are exactly the monsters that have lairs in Castle Greyhawk. It's an exact reflection of that environment. So every encounter is a clue to what kind of monster is somewhere around here that's got a treasure that we could find. And I think that a couple mistakes they made is not to explicate that absolutely necessary fact. That's the whole point. Mm-hmm. But additionally, when Gary evolved to advance D&D, I personally think he made a huge mistake of not hanging on to that principle, but rather expanding both the wilderness and the dungeon encounters to have to include every single monster in the game forever. And now you go into a dungeon, you roll on this generic table. Now it legitimately doesn't make sense that here's a big monster that's coming out of nowhere that doesn't have a lair. And I do think that that was a mistake. And I do think that if someone was learning the game for the first time in the first edition era, looking at those gargantuan random tables, they would have a legitimate criticism that it doesn't make sense. They would. And in fact, for what it's worth, I wrote a whole blog article on that particular point. You can see the link in the description to this episode on YouTube right now, as a matter of fact. And so I do think that in original D&D, it made sense in exactly that way. AD&D, Gary made a big mistake, and we can do better now.
It's interesting because I feel like this is the piece of the puzzle that's missing from the texts And I feel like we've gone on a very deep tangent here, but I'm going to keep pushing forward anyway, which is is there any instructions to say you should craft your own wandering monster charts, right? That is never called out anywhere. And I would even go so far as to say that that became part of my process for creating content. Whereas if you're making a dungeon and you're using, say, the algorithm in the back of the basic and expert books, as I often did, right?
Yep,
like it's you've got a map. You start with a map and then you're going through room by room and just rolling and seeing like what's in this room. And you're rolling on tables of, you know, that are essentially not that different from Wandering Monster tables. And my process back then was often to start with the table and say, okay, well, I know thematically what should exist in this adventure. I'm going to craft a custom table. Now I'm going to use that when I'm populating my dungeon. And then also I'm going to use exactly that or strip down maybe a reduced version of that table for the final wandering monster chart for this adventure. And it gives everything a nice cohesive feel to it.
And I do the same thing.
Great.
Highly recommend.
Great.
So there's a point where we agree on that.
So
that is a great, elegant point of agreement.
So let's get to the point of disagreement, which is, well, the conversation we had in the car, which is, well, how often do we roll? How often should we roll, Dan?
Okay, so the problem, there was an additional problem. And so the Order of the Stick cartoon came up at this point because of the solution that I came up with is that the very nice map that we borrowed from Dyson Logos for the wilderness area here didn't have any spaces and didn't have any scale to it. It has a little dotted trail from point to point. But other than that, there's no obvious way to determine how long anything is taking, frankly. So the first thing that came out of my mouth was we roll once per step from point A to point B. And for what it's worth, I think I came up with 1 in 6. How do you feel that worked in retrospect?
Poorly, I would say. Poorly.
Yeah.
And one of the problems, really, and this is ultimately my problem with wandering monster charts in general, is that probability is a bitch, right? Like, probability does weird things. In our example, I think we rolled at least, I don't know, 6-7 times and never got a single wandering monster. Not one. Didn't show up.
Yeah.
Right. Likewise, you can have the inverse where your whole game is consumed by random encounters because they hit every single time. Right? Those are both options on the spectrum of wandering monster charts, right? And it gets down to exactly the problem. You know, I have this anecdote that I love to tell folks from work, which is when I was working on an MMO and a designer told me I was working on spawn camps. And they said, okay, in this forest, we're going to spawn goblins, so I want to put a spawn camp here. For folks who don't know, a spawn camp is not a real object, right? It's just a concept. So we define the area, and we're going to say we're going to spawn this many goblins over this much time in this area. And they said, great, and just randomly put them in this area of this forest. And I said, okay, so if they all appear dead center, that's fine, right? And they said, no, absolutely not. They're randomly throughout the forest. I said, well, that's not random. You're talking about even distribution. Because at random, they could all be in one spot. Or they could be, you know, whatever. Anything is possible, right? And that's really what I feel like we were driving. That's what I was driving towards anyway, is like, well, I want some even distribution of these encounters. I wouldn't mind if one or two of them happen over the course of the day. I don't want 8, and I don't want 0.
And I'm more... So in retrospect, I agree that we didn't pick the right distribution. And when I was doing a quick calculation after the fact, and I think for that particular adventure, it should have been 2 in 6. Would have been 2 in 6 per step on the map. Would have been more appropriate. And then you would expect one encounter about every 3. 3 is a nice number. That having been said, I'm certainly a lot more comfortable with a particular session turning into tonight's session is about the wandering monsters, or tonight's session you didn't have any wandering monsters. And I do think that thinking about that distribution in advance is worthwhile. I agree that if I have 2 or 3 in a night is not bad. And if I'm rolling, you know, if I have to roll, if I'm going to be rolling around 6 times, then 2 in 6 would be about right. If I'm rolling 12 times, depending on how the time's flowing, then maybe 1 in 6 is more appropriate. And I actually do try to gauge an expected number of like maybe two per night. But if it comes in more or less than that, I guess maybe more comfortable swinging with that than some people are. Sometimes that's what the session turns into.
For me, this really boils down to an issue of pacing. And that means that what I want is going to be radically different when we're talking about an ongoing campaign versus a one shot. So in this example, right, we were talking about a game that we were running for an afternoon and evening, right? It was extended. It wasn't just like a 3-hour game. It was like a six or seven hour game that we played, right? But that's still a one shot, right? We were not coming back. There was not going to be another session. I like more of the simulationist kind of standpoint of rolling on tables and the random distribution or the random probability of encounters when you have an open-ended ongoing campaign. Right. So like the players know we're going from this point to that point, but when are they going to reach it? Is it going to be tonight? Is it going to be next week? Is it going to be 3 months from now? We don't know. And I kind of like that more open-endedness to it of a feeling of like, oh, this is a real world we're exploring. When we're in a one shot, like we were that night, what I would have said is don't roll at all. We should put in some of these encounters when it feels good. And I know that's probably, you know, absolutely causes the hair on his arms to stand on end and go, what are you saying? Yeah.
not as much as you think. This is fundamentally actually pretty good advice. I also adjust the distribution for those cases. And I'll say that my thinking is probably more biased towards campaign play. That's probably my initial thought process, if nobody points out the other use case, you're totally right. In a one-off session, yes, I'm willing to change the distribution. Maybe not entirely zero it out or pre-plan it, but yeah, if I'm running a one-off tournament in 4 hours, and classically, there's a lot of those tournament adventures that do at that point just wipe out the wandering monsters. It's legitimate. It is legitimate. That's perfectly fine.
Let me ask you this question, Dan. If you're running a campaign, would you be willing to change the rules on the fly? Like specifically, I'm imagining if you're running a session one night and just the wandering monster die just comes up a one every time. After the third or fourth wandering monster encounter, are you willing to say, yeah, we're just not going to roll anymore. This is getting tedious.
Okay, I actually did something like that in my last session. So in my last Star Frontiers game session, and I will point out that, now I've got 8 tangents that just sprouted off in my head. I'm trying to focus here. So yeah. I modified the classic Star Frontiers of Alternus campaign that did not have stuff based on random encounter tables, and I rewrote it. I rewrote the whole thing to be more based on random encounter tables, and that has been working out really well for me. Now, there was a point where, in the last session, where there was a branch, and the players, and I was offering the players could go to goal A, or they could go to goal B. And again, I'm making a lot more branches interconnecting than was in the original campaign. Now, goal A was like a 3-day trip away, and goal B was a 25-day trip away. And somewhat surprisingly, it was the first time that the players actually went off book from what is the traditional linear Volturnus campaign, and I was kind of happy that it happened. They picked option B, the much further away goal for that night. And when they did that, I actually made a decision to reduce the frequency of the encounters from, I think, 2 in 10 per day to just 1 in 10 per day, or half day rather. So I actually did make a decision to reduce the chance by half because they had picked a longer trip. I could potentially rationalize that by they had guides that maybe would keep them out of some of the danger areas. But I actually did make a decision. I wanted them to get to the destination area that night. And as a result, so I didn't zero it out. I didn't pre-plan them. I was still rolling. A couple encounters happened along the way. But I actually did make a decision to reduce the probability. So that actually is something I did in my last session.
All right.
Didn't zero it out.
Yeah. Yeah, still wanted to roll dice. I mean, this is the funny thing is, one of the points that we were talking about as we were going down there is your method of rolling wandering monsters when in a dungeon, which is based on wall clock rather than based on, you know, in-game time. And I actually quite like that. I like that because, again, it is allowing this mechanic to feed into what I think is the important part, which is the pacing of the actual session, not the simulation of the world, right? And so that's, I enjoy that. But then I think we got kind of stuck because we're in this setting where they're not wandering through a dungeon, right? They have this overland map with these points on it, where interesting things, you know, it's very sandboxy, right? There's like, you have this big map, this big world map, and there's, you know, we know what's happening at this castle, and we know what's happening at this farm, and we know what's happening at this cave. And then there's distance between them, and the players are going to have to travel around. Actually, I want to bring up another similar example, because maybe folks don't know our own content, but you can definitely look up. It reminds me a lot, honestly, of Death on the Reich, which is the, I believe, the second part of the Enemy Within campaign for Warhammer Fantasy, which was the content that we were using for the stream 10 Dead Rats. The way this module is written is really fascinating. It is a large overland map with different cities in it where there's a bunch of content for this is what's happening in this city and this is what's happening in this city. The players are given a boat and told, hey, go engage in merchant life, right? Load up your boat, travel from point to point, try to sell your goods. And they go up and down the rivers trying to do this. And then depending on what city they're on, maybe they'll have some of those encounters. There's another like second half of the content here that is just, here's a whole bunch of random encounters that could happen at any point along the river. And there's just a ton of them, right? Ton of extra just random encounters. And I don't think there's a chart, there's no table, there's no indication of how often. It's just like, have some of these while they're traveling the river. It'll be fun.
Yeah.
And then finally, notice that the image of the cover is this giant scary castle. Because this is, I think, the cleverest part of this content, which is there is this giant scary castle. And the players will likely pass it many times as they're traveling about and they're going from point to point. In fact, at least, you know, half of the book, and I know I've already said the half of the book, so there's half of a half, I don't know, I forget my math, but a large quantity of the content of the written content is the contents of that castle, right? And so, like, the funny thing about this adventure is repeatedly they see the castle and it's a very scary thing. It's intentionally written in such a way to be like, there's no reason for the players to go there yet. They shouldn't want to go there. It's very intimidating. They should avoid it. And that's exactly what happened to my players. They're like, nope, it's scary. It's weird. I keep hearing strange rumors about what's going on there. Let's not go there. And then continually, as they go to do some of the other set encounters, they learn more and more, and everything to the stinking castle. And eventually, the players have to have this conversation of, oh, God, are we going to go to that stinking castle that we've been avoiding as best we can for weeks and weeks? Ah, I think we have to go to the castle. Darn it. But of course, that's where the meat of the adventure is at the castle. You're supposed to go there. Anyway, so I think that's very cleverly written, that part. But I'm reminded of that sort of content, right? Where, again, it's very sandboxy. There's little adventures happening in the cities that maybe or maybe not related to each other. A lot of them just stand alone. And then there's just a whole bunch of, here's a bunch of random stuff that can happen while you're traveling along a river. Put this in when you want. And that's how I did it, right? I wasn't rolling charts as they were going up and down the rivers. I was like, there was a couple encounters I read in that I'm like, this one's too good not to run. I definitely want this to happen to them at some point. And then I was just like, with a feel for the pacing of the game, being like, now's a good time. Let's chuck this thing at them.
It's not, the first time I'm uncomfortable. I'm uncomfortable with that method. I'm sure it worked great. I mean, Paul's a great DM, and I'm sure it worked great for Paul. I remember the first time I saw a published adventure recommend that. And for what it's worth, it was in Dave Cook's module adventure for the BX system, which is coded as Module X4, Master of the Desert Nomads. And I remember getting that as a gift and being so excited about the adventure. And it's got just great flavor. It's got great texture. It's got great dark, scary art all the way through it by Keith Parkinson. And then on the first page in the introduction, for actually, I have it, you know what? I have it prepped here. Can you pull up the image with the yellow highlighting on it? And so on the first page of the introduction, I remember reading, this is a paragraph about how the, and it's got an enormous, wilderness, frankly, an overly large wilderness. There's a giant desert that's like the size of a continent, frankly, and that's got five encounters in it. I mean, obviously you don't have time to populate an entire continent like that. And so this here is saying, so we have these encounters and they're not in any particular location and they're not on any random table. It just says you're going to go to a particular terrain. When the player characters enter that type of terrain, the DM decides when and where on the map the encounter should occur. And then the last two lines at the bottom says the DM controls all the timing of the encounters. He does not have to worry about the characters missing an important encounter or not going in the right direction. And so this was my first brush with story designed adventures instead of location simulators. And yeah. I was very uncomfortable with that, frankly. Like, it bothered me that now, so the flip side of this is that it doesn't matter where the players go. It makes absolutely no difference what direction the players decide to go in or what clue they decide to follow up on, because they're going to have the exact same, and it's the same kind of thing. Here's a list of three encounters. You could technically put them in any order you want, but they should all happen. And now it just, the decisions of the players in the wilderness don't make any difference anymore. And that made me, that put a little bit of a foul taste in my mouth, honestly.
I can see where you're coming from that. The interesting thing is that,
the same year, I'll just say the same year.
Yeah,
right? The Star Frontiers adventures, the same year, 1983, used the exact same methodology of here. Some places they've got a couple tables, but mostly you go from here to here, you're going to have these one, two, three beats, and it doesn't matter where you go. And as example, that's the campaign I'm currently running. And here in 2024, I sat down, rewrote the whole thing, took those ideas, added some other stuff, and run it all with random tables now is what I've been doing. And it gives me more flexibility.
Yeah. There's a kind of a weird fine line for me here. Cause like, I keep thinking back to like the A series modules, especially if you look at the A series modules, with the tournament content. Right, they're incredibly linear. Right, they're just room. Right, they're just incredibly linear. And I definitely feel that when I'm running those, they're great. Let me get the encounters are fantastic. Right, they're generally very good, high quality stuff. But it definitely does not feel like the player has that much agency. Right, it's just, well, there's only one choice. We only have to go in this direction. I don't mind the flip side. Like, I liked the thing in Death on the Reich where, like, the juice of this adventure is in this castle, and it's there, and it's present, and the players can decide when they want to go to it, but they're gonna go to
it,
right? And conversely, as I roll that back, I like this kind of backwards method of crafting this adventure of saying, okay, well, there's this big castle, they're gonna eventually go to it. In order to foreshadow the need to go to it, it's enjoyable if they pass it many times. So they should be traveling around the river. And ultimately, they can decide when and where they want to travel around the river. Totally up to them. Who cares? Right? Travel up and down the river. Eventually, they're gonna pass this castle a few times. And then I also don't mind there being like, well, here's a couple encounters that could happen to the mother on the river that further reinforce some of that foreshadowing, some of that content that they're eventually going to get to. And then me saying as DM, well, I really want those to happen. Even though, like, I'm not just gonna let it go to like they exist on a table and maybe if I'm lucky I'll roll them and they'll happen or not. And I think ultimately, I saw a comment go by in the chat from Dirty History and Hobbies who said, "Well, there's no real problem with it. Only it isn't random or wandering anymore. It's a set encounter." Like, yeah, basically, I like this idea of this is a set encounter that's gonna happen in this adventure. It's just the actual when is up to the DM to pick. Kind of don't mind that. It's a little weird. It's very different from like your traditional, say, dungeon crawl, where like, no, this encounter is in this physical location, and so it happens when the players enter this physical location. And I don't mind if you're in a wilderness setting to say like, well, there's this encounter that's going to happen. The location is on the river, right? But it doesn't matter if it's this part of the river or that part of the river or whatever. It's on the river. I don't know. I like it.
Yeah, I'm weirdly uncomfortable. I'm weird. Like, I don't trust myself. I guess I don't trust myself as DM to. Okay, now a river is a linear thing. It makes slightly more sense. If you go up the river, you're going to run into this thing. I mean, why not put it at some location? I mean, why not? Well, why not just place it at a location?
In Death on the Reich, it's a forked river with many tributaries. So they go up and down and up and down the various lengths of the river throughout the adventure. So it could happen in between these two cities or in between those two cities or wherever. And the encounter is literally, there'll be things like, yeah, you encounter this other merchant going the opposite direction on this river. Like, cool. That could happen anywhere on the river system. Totally reasonable. I know, as you're pondering this, Dan, let me push us in yet an even different, weirder direction. Because when you first proposed this content, this topic, what first came to mind was not any of this, but was a Cthulhu book that I just bought recently called Deadlight. Because I'm about to go into convention season and run some Fearful End stuff, and I was looking for some Cthulhu adventures I could adapt. This is by Chaosium. I think it was printed in like 2015 or 2017 originally. It is two adventures that specifically happen on the road. It is making the assumption you're playing Call of Cthulhu set in the 20s. Your characters have access to a vehicle of some kind. They're driving along the road. Here are two things that could happen to them while they're driving on the road. And it's just fascinating because, like, the whole adventure is this happens to you while you're on the road. And I think that's just such an interesting trope. And I feel like I've seen that, and I was struggling to find, I'm like, I'm sure I've seen this in D&D, but I can't find it. But places where somebody's written an entire adventure with the idea of, like, you can drop this into your campaign while your players are on the road between two other locations. But it's not just, like, an encounter. It's not just, oh, you find these monsters, you meet these NPCs. It's a whole freaking plot, whole side adventure for them to do while they happen to be on the road. And in this case, I'm going to take that and make it the entire thing. It's going to be, you know, when I run this at a convention, because it's a one-shot, the whole game is going to be this thing that happens to you while you're on the road.
Yeah, and that's a great idea. I mean, it makes sense again for a one shot in particular, I think.
Yeah.
You know, how do you feel about that scenario?
Like, if you were running, for example, I don't know, neither of us I think ever runs long running Cthulhu campaigns, but how would you feel about you're running a long running campaign and you know, okay, like at the end of one session my players hit the road and they're going to travel, you know, 6 days to this other town, and you go, I got this whole adventure that could happen to them on the road. Let's shove that in. How do you feel about that?
I mean, you know, I you know, it wouldn't be my normal idiom. You know, I could imagine myself being enticed by a really well written designed thing. You know, I practice what I preach. In that, like, the Star Frontiers campaign that's got a bunch of encounters that you decide where they happen, like that, I rewrote the whole thing. I did, you know, I sat down and I was more comfortable rewriting the whole thing, folding those ideas into random tables. And you know, for me, you know, is my authorial intent for what counts as good pacing or plotting always right? Maybe not. So I think I'd like to be surprised by pacing plotting that the dice tell me about that I wouldn't have thought about. So I don't want to be constrained by my own sense of what the story is.
There's a someone commented in the chat. Can I find this real quick? I'm missing it. But somebody mentioned that, like,
there's a lot of good comments often.
You guys are great. I can't keep up. But there was a comment about how a lot of this kind of hook appeared in Dungeon Magazine, which I totally agree with. That must be what I was.
Yes, I agree. Yep. Finding, I've seen it.
Prepping for this show. Yeah. And I wonder about, like, could you in theory write a whole campaign where you just, like, have a whole bunch of Dungeon Magazines, and then you write a wandering monster table a wandering table that is just this adventure in this issue, right? Issue number, page number.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know. That might be fun. Wouldn't it?
Yeah.
It's very complicated, right? You'd end up with like really... Yeah. I don't know. Part of me is tickled by that. And part of me goes, yeah, it would be great if the things happen in a good order and they bounce off each other and they start to feel, and we use our, what's the word for it? I can't remember. Our human nature to see patterns where there are none. There's a name
right.
for that.
Someone's going to throw in the chat. Remember. I'm not coming. Yeah. It's like aphantasia or something.
Yeah. Something. Right. Like I love the idea of like, oh, that would start to happen. And then like everything would seem related. And then I would, you know, somehow tie it all together into some fun ending. But my gut says like, or you would run a campaign that feels incredibly disjointed and weird. And like nothing is related to anything. And we come away at the end scratching our heads and going like, well, what was the point?
The friends we lost along the way.
No. I think that's where I struggle with too much random generation. Too much random generation, I find, like, I like some. I like some because I like that, you know, I like the little extra bit of chaos, and I like the challenge as DM to then take those inputs and tie them together. And I feel like when I become dissatisfied is when there's so much of that input that I just can't. As DM, I just can't make it make sense anymore. I'm like, I don't know, a bunch of random stuff happened to you for no reason because that's life. Eh.
That's what I would have said. I would have said that with a positive spin. Yes, thank you so much. Here we go. Let's throw that up there. I have more taste for that. Let me tell you about an encounter that I felt worked well in my last gaming session. Again, playing Star Frontiers with the classic Volturnus campaign. And at this point, the players, to my delight, have now followed one of the interconnections that I've made. So the original campaign, fairly linear, honestly, and I broke it up and made more connections. And for the first time, the players went off the normal path, and I'm like, great. And so at some point, they, in order to help a particular alien group, they're going to go find the token of leadership that has been stolen by a rock-like bird creature that's flown in to a horrible Badlands area, lives on top of a spire, surrounded by 100 kilometers of terrifying alien strangle fungus that also just explodes once in a while. So the original game is you go through the wilderness area. There aren't, and also at that point, there, you're supposed to have a jet helicopter that should just take you there in an hour. Now, my players have picked this branch way early, so instead, it's going to take them a month to travel in on foot and back. So they've picked a branch that's much, much harder than it was supposed to be. And the original adventure didn't have any encounters on the way in or out because of that. But like everything else, the entire world, in advance, I have made, you know, some ideas of what's supposed to be around the area, and I have small tables. It's got five things that I could possibly roll on. So the original adventure, you're supposed to get to the top of the spire and then fight the bird at the top of the spire. That's it. That's the only thing that happens. Now, my players start going into the Badlands. They're several days away. They're camped up by a river. I roll an encounter the first night, and it turns out that in the middle of the night, they get attacked by that bird. This is not any part of the original game, but the giant bird just happens to come down. Like, and they have someone keeping watch. They see a form fly over one of the couple of moons on this world. So they get one round of alertness, and then a giant claw just comes out of the darkness and tries to snatch one of them up and carry them off to their doom. So they fight it a little bit. They're shooting in the darkness. One of them tries to lasso the claw the next time it comes by. And then having been injured, the bird flies off. Now, the players, because this happened the first night, the players come to think that the bird attacks every night, which is entirely not the case. This was a random encounter that only had there isn't necessarily an encounter at all. The dice just happen to come up in a minority roll like that. If there is an encounter, there's only a 1 in 5 chance that it's the bird that you're going after in the first place. But now they think that that's what the plot is. Bird attacks every night. So they sit there, they come up with a trap, and instead of traveling, they actually sit there for day number two, day number three, waiting overnight. Bird never shows up and neither does anything else. So they're burning rations. They've been tricked, frankly. They have come up with a trap. And at the end of the third day, they go, well, we're going to tweak the trap, carry it with us for the couple of days as we move towards the spire where the bird lairs and try to find a way to use it later on. But I like that was a beat of the players being tricked. It absolutely wouldn't have happened. I wouldn't have thought of that. Like I wouldn't have wanted to sit down and say the bird attacks the first night and then doesn't show up again. Would have been like me trying to screw with the players in a way that I don't like. But the fact that that's just how the world randomly swung in that particular iteration, I thought was like a really interesting beat of the players actually kind of getting tricked a little bit into thinking. And the funny thing is, I'm rolling for the encounter in front of them.
that's super weird.
Like, right? So one of the things I do, of course, and I highly recommend is for the random encounters that I'm assuming are are a description of what this environment is like, is, and I do this all the time in dungeon, wilderness, fantasy, sci-fis. I say to the players, in this area, the chance of the encounter is 2 in 10 each day. And I roll, in this case, I roll a big D10. And if a 1 or a 2 comes up, something comes upon you, right? And so I feel all the time that that heightens the sense of drama. It heightens the sense of fairness. I'm not just screwing with the players. And there's this moment of like looking at the die roll for all the players and then a big sense of relief. A big sense of relief if it doesn't happen. Oh God, oh no, an encounter is happening and they know that it's happening. So it was additionally a little weird that I told them that I'm rolling randomly to see if something shows up. And it's like they believe in the world enough to see patterns that actually weren't there. They actually didn't believe it was random, even though I rolled in front of them. Thought was like really, really interesting that they believe they're looking for patterns in this world. And, you know, if I need to come up with explanations for things like that, that's not a bad thing.
Did the thought ever strike your mind as this was happening, as they're setting up their trap and waiting for the bird to show up, to just send the bird anyway?
No, not a chance.
No.
Not a chance.
Because honestly, it is one of my favorite things, especially like if the players are like really into it and spend half an hour of gameplay devising traps for the bird. I'm kind of inclined to send the bird and just decide like, you know what? The players are right. The bird attacks every night. I guess I was wrong. What do I know? I'm just the DM.
I mean, I support that, right? I say yes to it. It wasn't half an hour, all right? It wasn't half an hour, yeah, I'll say that. No. And in my head, I'm seeing the bird hunting over hundreds of kilometers of space. And we've already established that the bird decided they didn't like this prey. They already get fought back and decided to flee. So my thinking is the bird is going to be hunting almost no chance in the same place. And that was what made sense to me at the time.
But did it lead to any dissatisfying play at that point? Like, were the players getting frustrated? Were the players like, oh, the bird isn't coming. What's going on? We spent all this effort. Like,
if
was
they
there any
were,
of that? Yeah.
If they were, I'm comfortable with that. Like that was the story for me. This is a dreadful place. And part of what, you know, random encounters tell me, are communicating is this is a dreadful place that you should be trying to find some way to not be here.
Yeah.
That's the story. A really good, like, if you're really playing well, don't be in this situation in the first place. Now they took the trap they'd come up with, like I say, and managed to travel with it and actually did use it at the end to great delight. Enormous. Okay. It was one of the best endings of a session that we've ever seen. As they, and I'm not sure because the resources at the place where they were weren't the same as where they ended up. So I'm not entirely sure that they would have had that trap to use to end the session if that hadn't happened at that point.
Interesting. Dan, I feel like we could keep talking about this for another hour, but we're out of time.
What? That's what?
Dan, I hate to do this now, but any final thoughts on random encounters while traveling?
So we talk about random encounters, and I'm so glad you brought this up, Paul, because I'm assuming that, yes, that the random encounters are tuned to this environment, and they're a description of how the environment is designed and what stuff is around here. To me, that frankly goes without saying. It gives clues and information about the environment that you're traveling through. I personally like that a lot more. I think that by randomizing the encounters instead of determining them by fiat allows the DM to be surprised, allows them to flex their creative muscle improvisationally as that happens, to come up with explanations. I certainly come up with explanations that I never would have thought of in advance, and they're frequently better, frankly. And the tables can be short. You can think in advance about how many times you want to roll that night. And you know, I you can see that I modify that a little bit. I wouldn't zero it out. And I'll just say one other thing that I just learned, right, that I've just learned in the last couple of weeks is for me to not void the encounters, is that I've had cases recently where I roll an encounter and obviously, and I'm sure you agree with this, Paul, they don't make sense right now. Okay, so stumbling into a pit trap while you're in camp overnight, that doesn't make sense. A bunch of other things that possibly, or maybe you've run the exact same encounter twice and that feels like that doesn't make sense. So a couple of times I made the mistake of saying no encounter occurs, and then the environment winds up feeling very empty. So I think for me, if an encounter doesn't make sense, I reroll. I don't just void it, I reroll it, because again, the random encounters are the things that make the world alive. And I think by fleshing out those tables intelligently, you're making a living world. And for me, that's what the travel encounters are about.
I mean, I agree a lot with the sense of, like, as DM, I want randomness or other inputs outside of my control to come at me and to force me to improvise. I definitely like that as well. For me, I definitely see random tables when you're random tables, whether that's wandering monsters in a dungeon or when you're traveling or whatnot, as one of many inputs to my ability to craft the game. So there's that. There's the written content. There's player action. Players do weird things, and I love reacting to that stuff. I love it. But I ultimately see all of that as inputs to my ability to weave together a cohesive whole. And if, for whatever reason, the mechanics are giving me something that feels wrong or at odds with where we're going or just a waste of time or tedious, I'm very willing to overlook it, reroll, void it, just don't even bother in the first place, or decide, yes, I've done the opposite. I've been like, I'm not going to roll in the random encounters. They're getting this. I'm plucking this thing out of the wandering monster encounter, and I'm throwing it at them right now because I feel like it. And ultimately, that's, for me, it's all about just lots of inputs. Like if the flow and the energy of the table is pointed in a direction, I don't want to tamp it down because the mechanics told me to. I want to run with that energy and keep the table hot. That's my feeling. So there
great.
You go.
Paul's a great DM. Very good. Anybody that has an opportunity should play with him because it works super well.
You know, Dan's a great DM also, and you should absolutely play with him. So yeah, I don't know. Different takes for different styles of DMing, I think, is great. You know, and I'll invite you, viewers, if you have yet a third take on this, or if you want to voice why you like one method versus another. Or problem areas you see in potentially in the way these things could roll out, leave us a comment in the YouTube video comment section here. We'd love to hear from you. Maybe that will spurn more conversation As clearly we have a lot more thoughts on this to share, and I'm certain it will leak into future episodes, so we'd love to hear from you.
Yeah, and of course, remember that you can like, follow, and subscribe to us. We are the Wandering DMs, and we are on YouTube, Twitch, Facebook, GitHub, places like that, with the handle Wandering DMs on all those sites. So please look for us there and bump into that like button.
If you prefer to listen to our show in audio-only podcast format, you can find those files at our website at wanderingdms.com. You can also find us on various podcast carriers like iTunes and Spotify and Stitcher. If you're listening to this show right now on one of those sites, and it gives the ability to do so, please rate and review our show. That helps other users of the site find us, and we really appreciate it.
We really do. And of course, big thanks to our patrons who support the show here. If you'd like to join them, please visit patreon.com/wanderingdms. And every single one of the tiers that we have get you access to our private Discord server where the conversation continues 24/7. And just like Paula said at the top of the show, we'll be there in about 10 minutes for our live video after chat with our patrons that we have every week that we look at. There were so many great comments in the chat today. Yeah. Like, so this is a conversation that was a little bit contentious between me and Paul. We kind of suck up a lot of the air, but so many great comments in the chat that we didn't get to. So hopefully we'll get to respond to a couple of those in the after chat, or at least think about those. We'll both be there today, Paul, I think. Is that right?
Yep.
We're not wandering.
Sure. Yep. Nope.
Sometimes one of us is wandering immediately afterwards. So I like to check in like that. So don't forget, we are live every Sunday at 1 p.m. Eastern time. So please join us again next week for another thought-provoking discussion.
We'll see you then.